This is Valor Radio. Valor, strength of mind and spirit that enables a person to face danger with steel-clad resolve and determination in battle or in any other situation. Valor, like that displayed by veterans of every branch of the military throughout our community. This radio show, Valor Radio, salutes all of you who have raised your right hands to volunteer and protect and preserve our unique American way of life. Thanks for joining us and your brothers and sisters in uniform for Valor Radio. Here are your hosts, Colonel Paul Simonelli and Captain Steve Momano. Well, soldiers, sailors, airmen, marines, coasties, and guardians, and the civilians serving by their side, we welcome you to the big tent here of Valor Radio. Bob Savage, along with Captain Steve Momano, the colonel is not with us this week. He's traveling somewhere, some secret mission. I just wanted to say thanks to Eric Carmen for all the great music, all the power rock of the early to mid-1970s, all the great hits that he did for us. Steve?
Yeah, absolutely. Eric Carmen died in his sleep this weekend. No cause of death determined yet, but he was 74 years old. Hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah, great career in the Cleveland market and went national. And this actually, that's not what I wanted to do here. Hold on for just a second. I've got a song to throw at you right here because he did have a sort of a national hit when he was first starting out in 1966 with a group that that they called the Choir. And this actually made kind of the middle of the charts. Eric Carmen and the Choir. It's cold outside.
Well, my world used to be sunny, and jokes used to be funny, but now you're gone, and everything's turned all around. Well, my world used to be warm, and then there was a storm, but now you're gone, and everything's turned upside down.
He would have been 16.
He would have really been 16?
Yeah, it's 1966.
He sounds 16.
I would
never even have thought that was him.
He and I are almost exactly the same. Exactly the same age. So
wow.
I was born in April of 50, and he was born in late 49.
This sounds like something he created in his garage with his buddies.
It does.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what it was.
Well, we're going to miss people like him.
Yeah, creative guy.
Yeah, he was best known for his 1970s hits like Hungry Eyes and All By Myself and the one you played when we came in.
Yeah, we're going to fall in love again.
And we'll play later one of his big hits with the Raspberries.
Yes.
Go All the Way, 1972, which was banned by the BBC, by the way. You know that?
What was their problem with that?
The sexually suggestive
what?
Lyrics. Yeah. Just because you show you how things have changed in Britain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nutty then and nutty now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So rest in peace, Eric Carmen. Thanks for the memories.
So what are we doing here today without the colonel?
We're gonna talk about the condition of the world right now in the country. And I got to tell you, it's not looking too good right now. We're up to our neck in the situation in the Red Sea right now. There was a picture that I posted on Facebook yesterday before of a cargo ship that was sunk by an anti-ship missile fired by the Houthi rebels in that neck of the woods out there in the Red Sea. And it's an ugly photo. It shows a picture of a big bulk tanker going under the waves with the stern sticking out of the water, and the screw is still turning.
Oh my God.
It's just an ugly photograph, but that's what ship sinking is all about. And I don't know what happened to the crew, but a ship sinking on the high seas is a cataclysmic event for the people who are aboard. And it's happening more often And we're not stopping it. Our presence in the Red Sea is not doing a thing about it. They're still firing at the ships, and they're firing at us. So, unfortunately, the U.S. Navy is in a situation now where we have to expend Standard missiles, which cost about $2 million a copy, to shoot down a drone that costs them maybe a few thousand bucks. But their drones are hitting the mark. Whatever they're doing, they know what they're doing. So unfortunately, we're in a world of you know what in the Red Sea right now. The Ruby Mar was the ship that I was talking about. It was carrying 20,000 tons of fertilizer and got hit by a missile. It's pretty emblematic of the chaos we're seeing in that part of the world.
Is that an Iranian missile?
The missile that they used?
Or was it a Houthi?
I don't know what kind of missile they used. Yeah. I suspect it was probably Iranian. Might have been North Korean, for all we know. But whatever they're doing, they're learning the technology.
Why aren't we sinking those spy ships that are in the Red Sea?
I don't understand at all.
Why can't we just put those on the bottom of the ocean?
Because we just don't have the will to do it. I guess we figured, we'll have to come up before some tribunal or something and prove that there were, that they were using it for intel. Everybody knows what they're doing.
I've got this tribunal right here on my right hand. I would show to them.
Yeah.
you're launching an act of war against the United States.
It's insane.
There's
what we're
a
doing.
Price to be paid for that.
There should be a price, but unfortunately, right now we don't want to pay it. We're satisfied to sit back and wait for things to happen, and that's a bad policy.
Just
in my opinion.
Yeah, reacting all the time.
That's a bad policy because number one, a lot of the shipping in the Red Sea has been diverted and discontinued. A lot of those shipping lines don't carry their cargo in the Red Sea anymore. So they win. And what do we get out of the deal? We're having to deploy ships to an area of the world that we normally wouldn't, and we need our ships elsewhere right now. Central Command, U.S. Central Command, unfortunately, is complicit in this whole disaster. They claim credit for degrading the Houthi capability. Now, degrading is not the word in my vocabulary that I would want to use. In my Navy, degrading enemy capabilities was not good enough. It was, and it's still not, in my opinion. You have to obliterate their capability. You have to decimate.
Yes.
You have to destroy their capability.
Anything other than complete, domination and elimination of
right.
the enemy is a loss.
It's a loss, and it's inadequate. It's not. We don't want to hear that. We're Americans. We don't want to hear that we're keeping pace with a ragtag group of. Goat herders that do this on the side, and that's what's going on right now. We're at the mercy of a tribal society that's linked to a sponsor in Tehran, and that's the worst situation of all. The image of that tanker, the Ruby Mar, is no different to me than those 1940 images of British ships being torpedoed by Nazi wolf packs. So what is our answer going to be? I don't know what our answer is going to be.
Yeah.
I just know that we can only kid ourselves that sooner or later we're not going to have to deal with a sinking of our own, one of our Navy ships.
What was the Ruby Mar's flag?
Belize. It was a Belize flagship.
Uh-huh.
And it was just carrying fertilizer. And unfortunately, we're in a situation where we're waiting for something bad to happen. And if we wait for it, it will happen eventually. And the question is, how many Americans are going to suffer because we waited to get our act in gear?
And here we are, because of our what passes for leadership in Washington, D.C., being dragged into more endless wars.
More endless wars. In fact, yesterday, a U.S. Navy auxiliary carrying supplies left Norfolk, Virginia for the coast of Gaza as its destination. Its mission is to oversee construction of a temporary pier in Gaza that would theoretically be used to resupply the Palestinians who need food and water.
So we're supporting the Palestinians, well, Hamas, and we're supporting Israel too. That makes total foreign policy sense.
We don't want to choose sides. We want to be completely down the middle, which is impossible in this kind of a situation.
Well, Steve, that's the way we spend twice as much money.
Yeah, we do. Well, you know, like I was joking about the other day, saying I thought when we were resupplying, you know, dropping air supplies, I thought we were dropping them to the Israelis because they're our allies or our partners, aren't they? I mean, we got to send them to the people on the other side too to make sure that they don't attack us or whatever. Well,
that doesn't work. Buying off the enemy, that
just doesn't work at all. It doesn't work at all. We tried this week. You know, U.S. Air Force was out airdropping supplies, pallets, out of the cargo planes this week, MREs and meals ready to eat and bottled water to the people of Gaza as a humanitarian gesture.
How nice.
And over the weekend, unfortunately, it killed two Gazans who were trying to be Johnny on the spot with the supplies, and one of the pallets, I guess, just fell on him. So that's not the way it's supposed to work, but maybe that's why they decided to send the ship to build the pier. So sooner or later, we're going to have to deal with it.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, you're listening to Valor Radio here on the WYSL stations. We're bumping out with, let's see, what is this?
Midway. John Williams.
Yes.
1976. Right. Not the new one, the old one.
Okay. Yeah, the new one we can do without that. But, anyway, more to come here on Valor Radio on the WYSL stations.
Go-to for standard of specialized business insurance coverage. MGM Associates of Rochester, now serving the region and beyond in New York. Since 1984, MGM has provided leading coverage from a wide range of carriers. Not only home, condo, boat, motorcycle, and auto, but also specialized policies for all types of businesses, including nonprofits and law firms, livery insurance, property insurance, and bonds for all needs. MGM Associates of Rochester provides auto, workers' comp, health care, and liability coverage. Choose from virtual appointments or good old in-office, in-person consults by appointment at our Penfield office. Five-time consecutive winner of the National Best Practices Award, MGM is proud to support veterans groups. For your personal, business, home, or professional insurance needs, meet the experienced staff at MGM Associates. Locally and proudly owned at 1745 Penfield Road in Penfield, 381-7008, or mgminsure.com. An associate of United Frontier Mutual Insurance, 190 Davison Road, Lockport, New York.
Your stuff deserves a better home. That's why you need to store with confidence at Hidden Treasures Self-Storage in Farmington. Units are safe and secure in a variety of sizes. At Hidden Treasures, there are no locks, no keys, no combinations. Bluetooth locks are controlled by your cell phone. Get 50% off your first month. Convenient to everywhere on Loomis Road in Farmington. Close to the thruway. Get peace of mind when you stow your stuff at Hidden Treasures Self-Storage.
From Niagara Falls to the Adirondacks and from Canada to Pennsylvania, you're listening to Valor Radio.
Valor Radio on the WYSL stations is brought to you by A.M. Ginsburg & Associates, the law firm of Christopher Johnson, Taylor Heating and Air, call 500-HELP, Hidden Treasure Self-Storage in Farmington, MGM Insurance, and the National Warplane Museum.
And with our bumps today, we remember Eric Carmen, a great music career. We lost Eric Carmen this past weekend. And back to the captain, Steve Milano.
Yeah, it's hard to be humble when you grew up with that kind of music. I love that little music. We were talking about the Pentagon and about what's going on in the Red Sea. Well, unfortunately, lately the Pentagon has become a primary purveyor of anti-Houthi rebel propaganda, putting out ridiculous tales of the U.S. Navy efficiency in striking rebel targets over in the Middle East. Now, what they did the other day was they announced, quote, the defeat of another attack in the Red Sea 3 days ago. Lloyd Austin, Secretary of Defense, are missing in action sector.
He hasn't been fired yet?
He's still there, and he's staying in the job. So if he would have gone away, he would have been gone by now. So he's sticking around. No, Lloyd Austin, that's not how this works. You defeat an enemy, not an attack. If defeating an attack is like, we expect you to defeat an attack. We want you to defeat the enemy. But that hasn't happened yet.
He does this for a living?
How many stars has he got? He was a four-star general. He was a big shot. And he gave up the uniform duty and put a suit on and became the Secretary of Defense. And he's got the job, whether we like it or not.
Scary.
Yeah, it is scary. I told you before, in the first place, this is not a fair exchange. If the U.S. is having to spend $2 million to shoot down a couple thousand dollars worth of drone, we're on the losing end of that deal. And when you vanquish a primitive tribe of Yemeni rebels with the sophisticated toys, we expect the armed forces to be able to handle that kind of a threat. But what you don't get to do is declare victory over an enemy after one stinking attack. And that's not how it works, as far as I'm concerned. And until Lloyd Austin can state categorically that the threat of missile and drone strikes by these Iranian proxies is obliterated, we don't get to declare success, in my opinion. So good luck, Lloyd. You're going to have to keep at it for a while. And the Navy is going to be out there doing its duty, and I'm just hoping that they're prepared for what could happen. So, meanwhile,
yes,
the U.S. Navy has seen fit. This is interesting. This is the kind of stuff they have time for now that they're, not engaged in, a strategy against China, those kind of things. The U.S. Navy has seen fit to reduce in rank Rear Admiral Ronnie Jackson. You know Ronnie Jackson, the congressman from Texas?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's retired from the Navy as a rear admiral. He was the White House doctor for several presidents.
Okay.
And it appears, I know he served them well. I mean, they promoted him to flag, and he retired as a one-star. Well, unfortunately, Ronnie Jackson is also an ardent Trump supporter. So they found a way to reduce him in rank in retirement and demote him administratively because he allegedly, quote-unquote, bullied his staff, his military staff.
Would that be the same thing as, in today's woke armed forces, is that the same thing as discipline?
Well, it's more than discipline. When you reduce somebody in rank, you really have to establish that they've done something dishonorable or something that was punishable under the UCMJ. And I still haven't heard what the guy supposedly did. Now, I got out in 2008, and at the time there was another admiral who had a really kind of a sad saga. His name was Joe Sestak. Joe Sestak was
a name's familiar.
Yeah, he was a congressman from Pennsylvania, a very liberal congressman from Pennsylvania. But in 2008, he was at the tail end of his just before I got out, he was at the tail end of his career. He was kind of a favorite of, of Vern Clark, who was the chief of naval operations at the time. But when the new chief of naval operations came in, Admiral Mike Mullen, he was out of popularity with Mike Mullen. And what happened was Sestak was at the time a vice admiral. He was a three-star, director of the CNO's Strategy and Policy Division, N-51, which was assigned to head up the year 2000, what they call the QDR, the Quadrennial Defense Review, which was a sort of a think tank within the Pentagon to analyze strategic military requirements and the economic value of U.S. defense spending. It's a big deal. They put a lot of weight in what the QDR said. He served under Vern Clark, and in 2005, after Clark retired, Sestak was fired by Mike Mullen, who removed him as deputy CNO for warfare requirements and programs, and was reassigned as a special assistant to the vice CNO. But he didn't want to stick around anymore. He just put his retirement papers in. But I remember the day that Sestak was fired, because it was notorious. I worked in the Pentagon at the time, and we used to hear these horror stories about how Joe Sestak abused his staff. And people would say, you know, so-and-so came out crying the other day, and, you know, he made so-and-so cry. Well, he's making, like, captains cry, which is which is not a good thing, okay? So that's real abuse. Well, apparently Sestak didn't, you know, suffer that wrath, but he eventually did get out, and he went on to serve as a member of Congress. He got out, became a candidate for U.S. Senate as a Democrat in 2010. He lost then to Republican Pat Toomey that year. But the point is, he was notorious for always abusing his military staff at the Pentagon. Infamous, in fact.
So this is for real.
This is for real.
This is not the contrived thing.
Right. But did anyone in the Navy at the time in the hierarchy go back after his retirement and administratively demote Joe Sestak? No. So why are they doing the same this to Ronnie Jackson?
Well, you answered that question early on in this conversation. He's a supporter of Trump.
Big-time loyal supporter of Trump.
Must be destroyed.
And he's also very critical of Joe Biden. I've heard some of the things he's critical of Joe Biden's health situation. And he'll say things like, you know, I haven't personally examined Joe Biden, but – and coming from a doctor, it's pretty damning stuff.
Sure.
So that's kind of where we are with the Navy this week.
Some medical conditions are so obvious. I mean, to anybody who is, right, you know, who is a trained medical person,
correct,
you can, you know, within a 10% leeway of accuracy, you can say what's going on.
You don't have to be a certified medical professional to see that there's something going on with Joe Biden, and it's not.
Well, we've all seen it with our older family members, our grandparents, right, our great uncles. They start to exhibit these signs of decay, of, you know, deterioration, and there's a lot of.
All you have to do is go back and look at the film, go back and look at video of Joe,
sure,
Joe Biden, just 5 years ago.
Yeah,
and look at the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, it's night and day. And for people to deny it, they're just, whistling past the graveyard, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So anyway, then we had, we had the State of the Union address. And if people were really interested in seeing Joe's cognitive decline, all they had to do was watch. So unfortunately, one of the offshoots of this speech was an incident that occurred with the father of a Gold Star father who was arrested as a result of a demonstration he made during the speech.
Yeah,
it's
kind of an outburst.
He disrupted the speech. No question about it. What he did was wrong, and he shouldn't have done it. But the question is what to do with the fellow, and why did he do it? Well, it turns out Steve Nkui is the father of Karine Nkui, who was one of 13 Americans killed by a terrorist bombing at the Abbey Gate in Kabul. And he was dragged out the House chamber by Capitol Police for disrupting the State of the Union address several times. He shouted, "Do you remember Abbey Gate?" and yelled the unit his son belonged to at the time, which was 2nd Battalion, 1st Marine Division. And it was sad. I mean, when you see it, you see the pictures of it, you just know that this guy is in pain.
Well, yeah, he's teeming with rage and sorrow.
And it's obviously unresolved. It's only a year later, and he's still in pain over the whole situation. He was a guest of Florida Congressman Brian Mast, who's a Republican. Mast is also an amputee and a veteran of Afghanistan. And he was arrested by Capitol Police and taken away and charged with something called disturbance of the public peace. So he's going to have a federal misdemeanor on his record when this is all over.
God bless him.
God bless
him. Family. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. More to come here on Valor Radio on the WYSL stations. Remembering Eric Carmen as we bump out here.
You're listening to Valor Radio with Colonel Paul Simonelli.
Welcome back in here to Valor Radio. The Colonel is on assignment. He is traveling this week. He got Bob Savage along with Captain Steve Mamano. And this is...
this is from Pearl Harbor in 2001. Yeah, this piece was played at the point of the movie where the Arizona has sunk and they're trying to get survivors out of the Oklahoma. It was a very poignant part of the movie. It was the best part of the movie, in my opinion, and Hans Zimmer is responsible for it. The great conductor Hans Zimmer.
What year was this, Steve?
2001.
Oh, okay.
Came out the same year as Band of Brothers.
Uh-huh.
It was a good year for movies anyway. But anyway, for the past week or so in New York, the National Guard and the New York State Troopers have been stationed in New York subway system stations as bag checkers to prevent further violence in the subway system, which, is out of control.
Yeah, that's how you do it, is check bags.
Yeah. Yeah, they make it sound like all they have to do is just make sure that the law-abiding passengers aren't carrying, like, knives or something.
And are completely inconvenienced and annoyed.
And, you know, they are annoyed by it. I can see people getting fed up with the fact. I mean, they don't blame the soldiers for it. But they're like, why are you checking my bags? I'm not the problem here, and they're not. So,
and it's also completely ineffective.
Yeah, completely.
The completely terrorists that are causing the mayhem on the subways are not. They're not toting stuff.
I don't understand what the thinking is that goes in. I don't think there's any thinking that goes into it, though. But the guardsmen were ordered to search people boarding trains by Governor Kathy Hochul, who has barred them from carrying long guns. So. You know, they're not doing what they came in the Army to do. They're not training. They're not trained to do what they're doing now. I don't see how it's a very good fit, but that's what's happening in New York. Meanwhile, the head of the Transit Workers Union in Chicago, Illinois, is asking Mayor Johnson for protection from gang members on CTA buses and subways.
Yeah, so, doing this, Chicago, of course, is watching New York enviously.
I've always,
aping that that.
Yeah, they don't like the second city thing. They never did, but they want into that money, and they want to use their military to make their lives better in the city. I don't blame them. If the order does occur, it's going to come from Democrat Governor J.D. Pritzker, who is no friend of law enforcement, by the way. So, again, the party that used to, used to bore us ad nauseum about the military violating posse comitatus, use of the military for law enforcement in peacetime. They're perfectly fine with us deploying National Guard troops in violent urban settings, which is not what they are trained for. So that's where we are this week with respect to law and order and the military.
We need to push back against this. By the way, the best way, guys, for you to I use that term generically, by the way, guys.
Yeah.
The best way for you to fight this is at the ballot box this fall. We have to elect conservatives and Republicans across the board, and you cannot sit this out. You absolutely have.
Can I emphasize that more? What he's saying is so important. You know, we get the government we deserve. I've always believed that. If we're willing to settle for a government that that reacts all the time instead of is proactive to improve our life, then we get what we deserve. We deserve to have a terrible situation with our police and fire departments. We had this incident with Attorney General James at a fire department. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
That was horrible.
Yeah, they were booing her.
And I normally I'd say, you know, oh, that's just awful. They shouldn't boo her. But, you know, somebody made a decision to bring Letitia James to a firehouse at a formation, knowing that she's a lightning rod for political heat, and she likes to give it. She likes to turn up the burner. And they wonder why she's getting booed when she's, you know, and the other thing too is she was admonishing them at the same time. I don't know if you saw it, but when they started booing her, instead of just, you know, waiting for the boos to die out and keep going on, she basically said, hey, you know, tone it down, folks. And people don't like hearing that. They don't want to be told what to do.
There's a reason why she's being booed.
Right.
It's because they hold her in contempt.
They hold her in contempt.
And that's only going to get worse.
Right.
She made some comment about, this is a house of God.
Yeah, I heard that,
too. It makes me wonder, does she think she's the God?
Yeah, I mean, maybe she is.
Yeah.
Maybe she is. And maybe she's striving for that. But, yeah, that's the week we had in politics, and we're still having it. So hopefully we'll have a little more.
The left loves conflict, by the way. They love that confrontation.
Oh, they do.
Stuff.
You could tell they do.
You know, and brandishing their political power.
She's one of these people who really believes that any kind of press is good press. She loves being the center of attention. She showed up at those Trump hearings and just sat in the audience with a smirk on her face, just so the cameras would show her sitting there with a smirk on her face.
And on the local level, by the way, we point out that lovely Warren is back.
I saw that. Tell us what happened.
She's running for city council. And the...
I thought it was city court judge.
I'm sorry. You're right. Right. No,
which,
I'm sorry.
Is she an attorney?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
She has a law degree.
What makes a person think that they're judge material?
If you are completely narcissistic and you live in your own alternate reality,
and she does,
just not unlike Astacio, you know, she's running for city court judge. And by the way, the Monroe County Democrat Party has said we're endorsing an experienced attorney, and
distanced themselves,
and it's not Lovely Warren.
That's good. That's beautiful. I just love to hear stuff like
but,
that.
But, you know, I mean, that was all been – what else is she going to do with her life?
I don't know.
She's not qualified to do anything.
Well, it's like Joe Biden. People say, well, you know, he's not going to run. He's really not going to run. What else is he going to do?
Yeah, and not only that, he has a massive ego.
Massive.
And, you know, his entire life is keyed towards adoration from the political left who follow him around like little puppy dogs.
Right.
And so, no, he's not going to – step down.
No, he's not. Well, we had a few things go on this week that were kind of sidebar, kind of entertaining issues, and one of them was the Academy Awards, which I don't watch anymore. I know you don't watch them. It was the 96th Academy Awards on Sunday, and I wasn't really interested in what was going to happen with the awards until after I heard that Oppenheimer had taken home 7 Oscars. Now, I'm interested in the subject matter because it's World War II, for the most part, and it's a nice biopic, and the subject matter is interesting enough. I mean, I know the story, I know the players involved, but I wanted to see how Hollywood would react to this movie, and apparently they ate it up. They gave it 7 Academy Awards for
Color Me Surprised.
What's that?
I say color me surprised.
Yeah,
I would think that that Hollywood would only like it if it was revealed that Oppenheimer was trans.
Well, you know what? That's a very good point, because in the criteria now for an Academy Award includes all kinds of socially redeeming aspects that you have to include in your picture. You can't just make a good movie anymore. You have to have some kind of issue or
right.
Something in the script that appeals to everybody. Mm-hmm. And in order to be seriously considered, and in this case, apparently he met all the gates. Director Christopher Nolan got Best Director. The film won Best Picture, Best Actor. The fellow who played Oppenheimer, whose name is Cillian Murphy. I've never seen him before, and we probably won't see him very much afterward because I'm sure he's typecast now. And also Best Supporting Actor, who's Robert Downey, who is not typecast.
He was quite good.
He's a terrific actor. And Best Cinematography. Okay, I guess we're gonna head to a break, and on the backside we're gonna finish up talking about what happened at the Academy Awards, and then we're gonna do a little movie trivia.
All right, sounds like fun here on Valor Radio on the WYSL stations. If you're hearing Valor Radio for the very first time, we welcome you. Now that we've expanded to 27,000 watts, reaching out to other far reaches of New York State. Join us every week at this time or get the podcast, and we'll be back with more on WYSL.
Your go-to for standard of specialized business insurance coverage. MGM Associates of Rochester, now serving the region and beyond in New York. Since 1984, MGM has provided leading coverage from a wide range of carriers. Not only home, condo, boat, motorcycle, and auto, but also specialized policies for all types of businesses, including nonprofits and law firms, livery insurance, property insurance, and bonds for all needs. MGM Associates of Rochester provides auto, workers' comp, health care, and liability coverage. Choose from virtual appointments or good old in-office, in-person consults by appointment at our Penfield office. Five-time consecutive winner of the National Best Practices Award, MGM is proud to support veterans groups. For your personal, business, home, or professional insurance needs, meet the experienced staff at MGM Associates. Locally and proudly owned at 1745 Penfield Road in Penfield, 381-7008, or mgminsure.com. An associate of United Frontier Mutual Insurance, 190 Davison Road, Lockport, New York.
Your stuff deserves a better home. That's why you need to store with confidence at Hidden Treasures Self-Storage in Farmington. Units are safe and secure in a variety of sizes. At Hidden Treasures, there are no locks, no keys, no combinations. Bluetooth locks are controlled by your cell phone. Get 50% off your first month. Convenient to everywhere on Loomis Road in Farmington. Close to the thruway. Get peace of mind when you stow your stuff at Hidden Treasures Self-Storage.
As a veteran of the United States military, I can finally get the opportunity to enjoy special events, things that we couldn't afford, thanks to VetTix.
Every empty seat at a concert, a game, or a play is a missed opportunity to say thanks to a veteran and service member. We can give our veterans a special event where they, too, can create their own cherished memories. Visit VetTix.org. Find out how you can make a difference in a veteran's life.
You're listening to Valor Radio with Colonel Paul Simonelli.
And, of course, with all the movie talk during our show today, the Oscars and whatnot, we have some musical themes. And this is what?
This is from Sahara, 1943, starring Humphrey Bogart, directed by Zoltan Korda. It's one of the best movies you have never seen.
Colder Boys.
Korda. He was his brother, I guess, or maybe cousin, I'm not sure.
Alexander Korda.
Yeah.
Friends of Winston Churchill.
Very close friends of Churchill, yeah. And if you've never seen this movie, you owe it to yourself to see it. It is one of Bogart's best movies, and most people have never seen it. He plays a sergeant in a tank. And the cinematography in this movie by Rudolph Maté is phenomenal. You've never seen desert camera work like this.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I love that. I love
that. Of course,
it's
Warner Brothers,
I
assume.
One of my top 10 movies of all time.
Wow, okay. Yeah. I'm watching this.
All right.
Because the last tip you gave me was Fury, which I watched last weekend. What an incredible film.
Ah. Well, I'll tell you what, that's a tank movie unlike any tank movie that's ever been made before.
It's a little rugged.
It is, but it makes you respect those guys, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
I just love those guys.
Brad Pitt's superb in that.
Brad Pitt doesn't have to make another movie, as far as I'm concerned, the rest of his life.
Yeah.
He was good, and he was fantastic in that movie.
I put that right. The bookends would be that, and on the other end, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, man. That's a good movie.
Great period
piece.
That's
a great, period.
Yeah, we're both children of the 50s here, so that 60s milieu and Once Upon a Time. You got to see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
All right. Don't miss it. You go. We got them on our bucket list now.
All right. So you're spotlight's on you here.
Yeah, we were talking about Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer. Nolan, I am no fan of Nolan. A couple years ago when Dunkirk came out, his very highly touted movie, I think it's the most overrated war film ever. I didn't like the movie because it took me about an hour to figure out what they were saying in it. Because one of Nolan's techniques is realistic dialogue, and it's just too realistic for me. They have their backs turned to you. They mumble a lot.
That's true of a lot of films now.
Oh, it's just but it's awful, and I couldn't understand. An hour into the movie, I didn't know, are these guys French guys or are they British guys? Where is this taking us? I couldn't understand where the story was going. But everybody's like, "Oh, it's marvelous and, you know, eclectic and oh, whatever you say." I've been watching war movies a long time, and I couldn't get it, and I was really trying because I liked the ending in the movie at Dunkirk, the way the guy landed the Spitfire on the beach and set the thing on fire. It was beautiful, but I didn't like the movie very much at all. But as a historian, I'm pretty sympathetic to the criticisms of movies like Oppenheimer, that they play fast and loose with historical facts, because movies have to be entertaining. And that often entails compressing time and oversimplifying complex details and manipulating dialogue to achieve dramatic effect. But in those instances, the director has to fess up. I mean, Oliver Stone was criticized for JFK, and he came out and said, you know, this movie is not a documentary. I took some liberties to tell a good story, and you know, I'm okay with that.
And it was very entertaining.
It's a great movie. I mean, I tell people you got to watch JFK. It's just a great film. I've not seen Oppenheimer. You know, I've been talking to quite a few people who have seen it from both sides of the political aisle, and they all generally agree that the film takes a sort of a left to center approach. That's a big revelation. For the events leading up to the A-bomb, and when you let the bias get in to define your presentation, you definitely are going to misrepresent history. The fact is, if the U.S. hadn't gotten the bomb first, Nazi Germany would have developed it and used it, and the Japanese certainly would have deployed it. And those are not insignificant details. So if they want to get mad at us for deploying the atomic bomb, fine. Anyone who aggressively pursued U.S. control of the bomb would be viewed as evil. And in this case, I asked the people who saw the movie, was Edward Teller kind of villainized in the movie? And of course he was. I don't know what General Leslie Groves' character was like, but they had Matt Damon playing Leslie Groves.
Well, he definitely is abrasive.
Oh, yeah.
And in your face.
Leslie Groves was an a-hole. I mean, he was.
Matt Damon is an a-hole in this film.
But I'll tell you something. Paul Newman, who was as anti-nuclear as anybody I've ever seen, played the role of Leslie Groves right down the middle in Fat Man and Little Boy.
That's a good film.
That is a good film, and Paul Newman is phenomenal.
John Cusack's excellent in it.
So, you could play Leslie Groves and do him justice. So, Robert Downey Jr. apparently played this fellow, Louis Strauss, who I'm not aware of, but apparently he was some kind of rival to Oppenheimer and tried to sabotage some of his efforts along the way. But, I'm sure that they did, take some liberties with the story, but it may be a good movie. Go see it and let me know. I'd like to get your feedback on what you thought of the movie.
Very, very talky and overlong, I think, is what I would characterize
it. I don't doubt that. Now, we're going to spend the last couple of minutes of the film here talking Oscar trivia because of the Academy Awards. With the backdrop of the 96th Academy Awards, of course, we're doing some trivia involving actors who were either nominated for Oscars or were in movies nominated for Academy Awards.
Okay.
Okay, only got a couple of them because I ran out of time getting prepared for this, but we're going to have just enough time to get through it. This Ohio-born actor played military men in a number of movies in the 50s and 60s, including White Christmas in 1954, The Eternal Sea, which is a Navy movie, and First to Fight, which is a Marine Corps movie, 1967. Excuse me.
Taking a quick swig here.
Okay, but his signature role came in the 1950 Henry King classic, 12 O'Clock High, as Major Harvey Stovall, a retread Air Corps officer who became ground exec to Brigadier General Frank Savage of the 918th Bomb Group. The performance won this actor the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. Who was he? Was he Brian Donlevy, Edmund O'Brien, Van Johnson, or Dean Jagger?
Dean Jagger.
Correct. All right, I got to stump Bob Savage over here. So, all right, you got one on your side, Bob. Here you go. Question two. This journeyman actor played in some of the most popular films of the 1940s, mostly as a Warner Brothers contract actor. He was popular playing heroes and villains, but his bread-and-butter role was always as a wisecracking New Yorker in Oscar-nominated movies like Sergeant York, 1941, Air Force, 1943, and Objective Burma, 1944. But he is mostly remembered for playing the hapless Abner Kravitz on the ABC TV sitcom Bewitched, which ran from 1964 to 71. Who was he? Was he Bruce Bennett, George Tobias, Dan Duryea, or Alan Jenkins?
Dan Duryea?
No, incorrect. It was George Tobias.
Oh, okay.
If you saw him, you'd recognize him instantly. He had that voice about him, and he had those jowls, and he was good. I mean, George Tobias could act. So
2 minutes.
All right, we got 2 minutes. We got one more question. This burly actor with a deep, gravelly voice was equally adept at comedy and drama in such classic war movies as The Bridges at Toko Ri, 1954, Attack, 1956, and Stalag 17, 1953. But it was in Stalag 17, which is a Billy Wilder movie,
yes,
directed, that he achieved immortality as the sad sack American POW Sergeant Stanislaus Kuzawa, also known as Animal, for which he won the Best Supporting Actor Oscar. Was he Robert Strauss, Harvey Lembeck, Ed Begley, or William Bendix?
William Bendix?
No. Good. I would have thought William Bendix if I hadn't seen the movie, but it was Robert Strauss. If you ever saw him, he is unmistakable. He played in Attack with Buddy Ebsen and Jack Palance, and he was believable as a grunt.
That's funny. I've seen that movie like three times.
What's that?
It was Stalag 17. Right?
Oh, Stalag 17. He's the guy that, remember, Harvey Lembeck was the guy, the two guys who were always cutting up. They were trying to get into the women's shower with the Russian women. Remember that, the scene with the paintbrushes?
Yeah,
and
it's been a while.
Yeah, great movie, great actor, and wish we had more like him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Captain, thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, anytime.
And stepping up in the absence here of the Colonel, who should be back next week. We thank you for listening, and keep our service personnel in your prayers. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to the Valor Radio.
I'm bright and early. I'm all business in my suit. Yeah, I'm dressed up for success. From my head down to my boots, I don't do it for the money. There's bills that I can't pay. I don't do it for the glory. I just do it anyway. Providing for our futures, my responsibility.